You're now listening to part two of this podcast episode. The very first part was called You Are Enough. If you have not listened to that episode, I want you to go back and listen to that one, then come back and listen to this one. So part two is He is Enough, referring to God, that God is enough. And the reason why this is so important is because there's so many times we go through things in life, you all. So many times we go through things and we're just wearing ourselves out and stressing ourselves out trying to figure out how in the world am I going to get out of this situation? How in the world with all of the pressure that's already on my plate? First of all, where is this even coming from? That's a whole nother subject. You know, I did a podcast on that a while ago about the story of the weeds and the tare, about the wheat and the tare. Whenever you're out there sowing good seed, don't be alarmed in the middle of the night when the enemy comes and begins to sow weeds, W-E-E-D-S, you know, among the good wheat, you know. And then that whole passage, and I'm not turning to that one right now, but I talked about how in that story that Jesus told, the workers of the field wanted to know, where did this trouble come from? And should we go and pull up the weeds? And I love that passage because I love the mystery behind what was said when Jesus said, you know, let them both grow up together. He said that at the proper time, you know, they'll be, you know, we'll bundle up all the weeds and it'll be thrown, you know, into the fire and this and that. But the mystery behind that is that, no. You don't get distracted and don't be alarmed by all the things that will come your way. You need to know that God is enough. He is enough. Whatever you're going through in life, know that God can help you and get you out of that situation. He can help you and give you the wisdom that you need. Maybe it's not necessarily a negative situation that you're in, but it's just that you're lacking wisdom. You know, I go through situations all the time where I'm asking God, show me what is it that I'm supposed to do in this moment and in this season of my life. And so many times we can be so tempted to go outside of the alignment that God has for us and begin, as I said in the first series about You Are Enough, begin to listen to the voice of the enemy, begin to do things we don't have no business doing, begin to run after things that have nothing to do with our gifts that God has given, you know, put us here to do. You know, there's an episode I created a long time ago called Stop Chasing Seeds. And that whole episode, and that was years ago I created it, but that was Stop Chasing Seeds That Don't Belong to You. Because sometimes when we find ourselves in a bind or we find ourselves going through a difficult situation, especially when we feel it's unfair, something that someone has done, you know, we're trying to set us up, or a situation where we're just like, this don't even match up with my circumstance. Like, God, I'm worshiping and praising you and doing the best I can. Now, where did this bill come from? You know, or where did this situation come from? Where all of a sudden I got to deal with this and I got to deal with that. That's why it's so important that we learn to identify the weeds when they come and we don't get distracted by that and start listening to the lies of the enemy thinking we're not enough. So this episode is all about He is enough, about God is enough. Let's turn over to the book of Daniel real quick. I want to talk about the book of Daniel. So just to give a very, very, very brief summary in the book of Daniel, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon came and took over Jerusalem and besieged it. And there were some people that he wanted to be a part of his, you know, royal community, family club, whatever you want to call it. Daniel happens to be one of them. And Daniel was one of the ones that had tremendous wisdom. And chapter 1 and verse 17, and I'm not going to be parking here. I'm going to be parking a couple chapters ahead, but I'm just giving you a little bit of a heads up. In Daniel 1:17, it says, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding and all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. Now go down in verse 19. The king talked with them and he found none equal to Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, by the way. So they entered the king's service. Listen to this. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians, enchanters in his whole kingdom. Now, I'm not going to walk through all of this, but Nebuchadnezzar basically had a dream. And he had all of his astrologers and magicians and all these people come. And he basically said to them, look, I'm not going to even tell you what the dream was. You need to tell me what the dream was. Otherwise, I'm going to take all of y'all out. Right. And so everybody was just kind of freaking out, like, what in the world? Daniel comes along and Daniel, I'm paraphrasing at this point because I want to get to the chapter that I'm trying to get to. But Daniel basically comes along and basically says, you know, no man can really do this, but God is the one that can interpret. You know, God is the one that can answer to this. And Daniel then went into prayer, right? Because he knew that he was enough, meaning God, that God was enough. He sought the Lord's help even in a situation that most of us would be like, how am I going to interpret a dream? Can you tell us the dream so we can interpret it first? You know, equate that to a life circumstance. Like, how am I going to get my butt out of this situation when, like, can I get a clue or a hint? Remember, I always said, when you read the Bible, this is my take on it, I'm always looking for what is the mysteries hidden behind the story, hidden behind it. And what I'm seeing is, when you're in a situation where you feel like you're up against a wall, talk about being up against a wall. The king told them he was going to kill all of them, just so you know, right? And Daniel's like, can you give me a night to just pray and go before my Lord? You know, he knew that God was enough. He wasn't trying to go behind the closed doors and figure out, did he tell you anything about the dream? Do you know any? Was it about a cat or a dog? Was it about a this or that? You know, he wasn't trying to figure. He knew that God was enough. So I'm still not even at the part where I want to be at. The bottom line is, the Lord ended up speaking to Daniel. Daniel ended up interpreting the dream. Everything worked itself out. Everybody was saved in that moment. The king was very happy, saying, basically, Daniel, you the man. Like, you know, whatever God this is you serve, and this is the, I'm paraphrasing, this is the God, you know, that apparently speaks to people. So I'm going to move on. Then it goes on a little bit more to talk about Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego been thrown into the furnace. I'm not even going to go into that story. That's a great story to read, but it's a beautiful story that also showed that God was enough. Because they were like, look, we're not going to be worshiping this golden image. You know, if you turn to Daniel chapter 3, you can read on that. We're not going to be worshiping this golden image that you set up. I'm sorry. That's just not going to happen. We're going to continue to focus because we know that God is enough. And even if it should come to the point where we have to be thrown into this blazing furnace, which is exactly what they would end up happening. In fact, the king was so mad he had it turned up. Was it 7 times or 10 times? Daniel 3 verse 19, this is the king. He ordered that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So you guys may know that story. The bottom line is that they were thrown into the blazing furnace. And the bottom line is that, when they came out, and that's in verse, I think 27 or so, they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Again, I'm not even at the chapter I'm trying to get to yet, but I got to pause with this a second. I always try to pick up the mystery behind what the passage is saying. You mean telling me you're thrown into a blazing furnace so hot that even the soldiers that were marching you down, they were burned in it, right? Turned up 7 times hotter. You're trying to tell me their hair was not singed? And now you're trying to tell me because they sought the Lord first and they knew that God was enough, you're trying to tell me that they didn't even smell like what they had just been through? They didn't even smell like, you picking up on that mystery in the passage, you all? They didn't even smell like what they'd been through. Some of you who are listening or watching me right now, you've gone through things in life, and I'm sure you have, as I have, especially for those of you who've read my book, Necessary. And people look at you and they don't realize that they're seeing the credits rolling. They're seeing the end of the movie because they missed the whole movie. It may look good to them, or they may think you got it all together, right? And they don't even know what you've been through. They don't even know what you're going through right now because you make it look so easy. That's another podcast episode you guys may want to look up and find. I produced years ago called You Make It Look Easy. I think that's what I called it. But you make it look so easy. They don't see when you get home how you're praying. Some of you, like me, going into your secret place, into your closet. They don't see when you're coming into work or when you're going throughout your day or when you're giving or serving and giving to other people. They don't know sometimes you're giving your last and you're not complaining about it. So that's the mystery I see behind that passage, is that they don't even look like what they've been through. The Bible says, my God, They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. My God. So what becomes of that? I'm drifting now because I'm still trying to get to the chapter that I want to get to. But just let you guys know I'll drift for a minute and I'll come back. What becomes of that person who knows that God is enough and continues to walk faithfully despite the circumstances looking so bad? Here's what becomes the very next verse in verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angels and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way." You know how huge that is for a king to say that? All of the pagans and all of the different gods and things that they worship, Molech and Chemosh and all of those other gods. Do you know how huge that is that this king turns around and say, if anybody says anything against their God, basically I'm going to take you out. You begin to have an impact on other people as you come out the fire that you went through that people didn't think you could even survive. You literally begin to change their view of who God is. I told God the other day, when people see my life, I want them to feel like a page of the Bible was just open up. When people hear me talk, I want them to literally, it's called being a living epistle, by the way. I literally want the manifestation of the glory of God to be so obvious in my life that whether I'm on my good days or my bad days, and you guys know I have some bad days, some bad seasons. If you've been with me long enough, you know. For those of you who are just listening to me for the first time, you'll find out, right? I have good days and I have bad days. But no matter what, I want when you hear me, when you see me, when you listen to my story or whatever I'm going through in the moment, I literally want you to feel like a page of the Bible has just been revealed, that the glory, the manifestation of the glory of God has just been revealed. Why? Because I want other people to see a version of God when they see me. And I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I mean, I want God to be revealed through my life. You get to impact others even in your trouble and even in your mess when you're doing your best to come out of the storm, baby. And I know that there's some people that look at you and don't even know the struggles you're going through or what you've been through or what you had to go through to even get where you're at now. You may even have some people hating on you and you feel like, well, what have I done? Like, I don't have much. I'm trying to hold and maintain what I got. And you don't understand what I went through even to get to this point. And people still looking and hating and treating you certain kinds of ways. And they don't know that all of the stuff that you've been through to get to where you're at now. So what becomes of that baby when you begin to continually walk and trust and know that he is enough, meaning knowing that God is enough, even when you are a broken vessel, and I certainly was, I always am, let me just say that, but even when you are a broken vessel, as I was writing my book, Necessary, I'm amazed to this day, sometimes I go to Amazon and just read the reviews, I'm amazed to this day how many people are being helped and going on a transformational journey, especially for those of you who are part of my retreat. I have an entire 12-week retreat called the Necessary Retreat available on my site, which is based on my book, Necessary. It walks you through a whole lot more. You go through your own transformational journey, totally inspired by the grace of God. I won't even go into that. I'm not trying to plug something. I'm just making a point. But when I look at what people say, and I look at almost every day, especially those who are walking through the retreat, but almost every day I'm getting reviews in or people are messaging me saying, you don't even understand. You don't understand how your story, how your situation is helping me pull through what I'm going through. And when I hear from mothers or fathers in some cases who say, Zee, I lost my child years ago and I gave up on God. I didn't want anything to do with him. But now you've taken away my excuses. You mean telling me you lost your son while you were writing this book and you still have the audacity to give God credit and to try to help other people when you're suffering yourself and grieving? With all the things you went through in your marriage and in your finances and in your personal life. When you come out on the other side of this, baby, you don't look like what you've been through. You don't smell like it. So the beautiful thing about it is you then get to impact other people. And that's what happened with this. And then in verse 30, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Look at that. You see that mystery? You see that mystery? What happened? They were going through an impossible situation. They trusted in God. Stayed the course. Not only did they impact other people who then were like, in this case, the king, like, whoa, I ain't never seen a God deliver like this. Then they turned around and they were promoted. Now, I still didn't even get to the chapter I wanted to read, and I'm about to end this episode. So the point I was trying to get to really is not all the way until you get to chapter, let me see. My God. I want to talk so much more about this. I wanted to get to the part when Daniel's test came, when he was thrown into the lion's den. They basically, so let me get to the point. Nebuchadnezzar died. His son, I think, was King Belshazzar. Let me just go to it, because if I say it wrong, there would be some people saying, Z, you need to make sure you're saying the right. Okay. In chapter, I think this is chapter 5. Nebuchadnezzar's son was basically arrogant as all get out. You know, won't even go through that. Neb definitely went through his mess too. But I'm trying not to make this about Nebuchadnezzar. But his son then came along, and his son was just arrogant. His son was, you know, using the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple of Jerusalem. That's when they had, you know, basically raided them and took everything. This is in chapter 5. And his son basically had, you know, some dreams as well. And basically they knew that Daniel was very powerful in terms of being able to interpret dreams and visions. And in this case, there was a hand that was writing something on the wall. And I'm trying to get to the point. Daniel interpreted what that meant, basically like your kingdom is about to come to an end because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing with following God. But let's get to chapter 6. In chapter 6, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. In verse 3, now we're still talking about he is enough, God is enough. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Look at what God does, right? They couldn't find any corruption in Daniel. That's in verse 4. So now we're on King Darius. You know, everyone was saying, oh, King Darius, live forever. You know, that's down in verse 6 and 7. But look what happened, how this trap came for Daniel. Verse 6. I'm in Daniel chapter 6, verse 6. So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god, here we go, or man during the next 30 days except you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. So here we go again. We're talking about the, you know, the weeds or the tare, right, and the wheat, right? We're talking about, I ain't doing anything to bring this trouble along my way. I'm just trying to do my best to honor God and serve him and leave everybody alone. Where is this coming from? Okay. So I thought Daniel's response was really interesting. In verse 10, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, so mind you, he's not supposed to be praying to any other gods. He went home to upstairs in his room. He went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God, just as he had done before. Daniel did not break that pattern in the spirit. Now, if you watch the first part of this, part 1 of 4, remember I talked about the importance of creating these. The Bible really is all a series of patterns and principles. I teach this quite a bit in my mentorship sessions. For those of you who are in my mentorship, you already know what I'm talking about. But there are patterns in the spirit. You know, there's patterns in the Bible. The Bible really is just all patterns. And when you find out what pattern you're in, you already know what the end result is going to be because you're following that pattern. So what's beautiful about this is that Daniel kept that pattern. He's like, no. I'm going to continue to pray to God as I've done before. Now, you all know what happened with this story. The bottom line is that he was thrown into the lion's den. The king didn't even want to do this. In verse 14, when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. So the king did not want to have him thrown in the lion's den. But all of his, you know, administrators and satraps and all these people that was basically jealous and hating on the man, they basically said, hey, this can't be reversed. And I won't get into all of that, but once the king kind of puts his signet ring on something and issues like an edict or a decree, you actually can't reverse it. So the bottom line is, in verse 16, so the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God whom you serve continually rescue you. I said all of that just to get to that point. My point is, God is enough, and I said all of that just to get to that point. He said, may your God whom you serve continually rescue. And then let's just jump around a little bit. Verse 21, Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lion. Let me go up in verse 19. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. So this is the morning after Daniel was thrown into the den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God whom you continually, who you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. Then the king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, look at this. Here we go again about no fire, no smell of fire, no hair sands. Listen to this. No wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. If you guys ever get some time to look up what happens when someone is thrown into the lion's den, you're literally crushed before you even hit the floor. They literally starve these lions for a while. So by the time the crate is lowered and you're in it, you don't even stand a chance. No wound was found on him because he trusted in his God. My God. At the king's command, the men who falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their, oh my goodness, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. My God. So what's the mystery behind this one? This is part two. I'm wrapping this up. What's the mystery behind this that we're supposed to allow to be revealed? We have to know that God is enough. He's enough, you guys. And I know that's easy to say, but we have to know that God is able to rescue us. No matter what the situation is, no matter what we're going through in life, whether we're seeking wisdom, we're seeking knowledge, we're seeking, you know, whatever it is, whatever it is that you can come, God is enough. That's the mystery revealed in this. We continue the pattern. We continue to worship him, to pray to him, to go to him, and know that he's going to deliver us. And that's exactly what happened. I love you all. This is part two of four. And you're listening to Z with Unlocking Greatness Podcast. Be encouraged.